piece, but an important piece. Thank you for your work.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. District Attorney, Assistant Deputy, what's your right title?
Senior. Senior Mayor, thank you.
Okay.
Every time I say that, that's another gray hair. Mayor Adams, members of the council, my name is Pat Callahan. I'm a senior deputy district attorney. I'm currently in charge of the gang unit in the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. This is my first opportunity to appear in front of the council, so be gentle. I have been prosecuting cases for more than 29 years. And I've been in charge of the gang unit now for about 3 years. And Mr. Schrunk asked me to appear in front of you today, not necessarily to endorse particular proposals, but rather to thank the mayor and the council for his leadership in taking on a very difficult and thorny issue and giving more tools to law enforcement to try and address what is a growing and very serious concern in this city. Our office has always worked and currently closely works with law enforcement, with the Gang Violence Task Force, with the Department of Community Justice, with the juvenile justice system, in trying to prevent gun violence and gang involvement. Because, of course, it isn't just a gang problem. It isn't just gangsters who use guns. What we can't prevent, we are tasked with prosecuting. And we do that to the full extent of our powers and our abilities. But more needs to be done. And so I am here today to echo the concerns that have been addressed by law enforcement and to express our appreciation to the mayor's office. And frankly, applaud you for weighing in on this very difficult issue and pledge to you that our office will do everything that we can to assist in the city's efforts to craft enforceable, workable law enforcement tools to assure that we have these tools and we can effectively use what resources we have in this time of very limited resources to make a difference in addressing this problem and to help protect the citizens of this city and to make our community a safer place in which to live.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. 29 years. That's a lot of service. That's great.
Thank you.
Penny.
Hi, I'm Elise Gauthier with Ceasefire Oregon. Penny Okamoto, our executive director, is ill and was unable to be here, and that's why I'm speaking for Ceasefire. We've been working on gun violence issues in Oregon for many, many years, and we also want to thank you for focusing today and this year on how to reduce gun violence and taking some real action. We're not taking a position on the curfew or the hotspot proposals because they involve issues beyond our purview, but we do strongly support the other three proposals. They are clear, they're techniques that have been tried in several other jurisdictions with success, and there are things we can do now to keep people who recklessly put guns within easy reach of children from doing so. I would add to the many facts that Ms. Lieber gave you the fact that evidence-based studies have also shown that reducing access to guns by kids also reduce the risk that they will be shot unintentionally or commit suicide. We have a terrible problem with teen suicide in Oregon, and the child endangerment ordinance will also help prevent additional suicides. There was an article in today's paper about the 15-year-old boy who took a gun out of his closet, took it to school, and shot people. That is a perfect example of the kind of shootings that the child endangerment ordinance is designed to prevent. It is time to hold gun owners responsible for keeping their guns away from children. As Senator Burdick said, most gun owners are responsible. We need to give them more of an incentive, the few who aren't, more of an incentive to keep their guns away from children. A 14-year-old boy has been charged with bringing a gun to Benson High School and shooting a 15-year-old there. Luckily, he missed. Unfortunately, the 16-year-old who apparently shot and killed Billy Moore in June didn't miss. How are these teenagers getting the guns? How many other young men and children are going to have to be shot to death before we stand up and say, this has got to stop? So please at least pass proposals 2, 3, and 4, and let's take action now to protect the lives of everyone in our community. Thank you so much for seriously considering these proposals, and we greatly appreciate your taking action.
Thank you for your decades of work on this issue and also for being our partner for the gun turn-in. Really appreciate it.
Certainly. Thank you.
That concludes our invited testifiers. Unless I'm mistaken, we'll now go to the sign-up sheet. How many people have signed up?
We have 16 people.
Okay.
And the first three, please come on up, are Larry L. Emery, Lily Mandel, and Erwin Mandel. They'll be followed by Teresa Rayford, Armando Payton, and Garvin Franklin, Jr.
I welcome back to the City Council. It's good to see you.
Thank you. Yes.
You're not going to vote.
I'll tell you my excuse.
You're not going to vote today.
They're all non-emergencies.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Hi, Lily Mandel. It is our duty to protect all of our children from the gun. The gun is not a toy for fun. Children should be protected in their homes, streets, schools, cars, and everywhere from the gun. For it is chilling when you think of all the killing from the gun. We can't be willing to continue this constant killing from the gun. Let's resolve to solve this senseless, horrible killing of our young today, so they may grow up to live many more tomorrows, and don't leave behind so many sorrows from the gun. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Erwin Mandel, just something technical in it. We have a listing of illegal firearms use hotspots. The A, central hotspot, it's rather odd to read. Let me read it to you. The area encompassed by the west bank of the Willamette River, the center lines of Southwest Madison Street, Southwest NATO Parkway, Southwest Jefferson Street, the center divider of I-405. Now, that sounds pretty simple. You've got a two-block north-south area running from I-405 to the river. Now, the finish of that sentence is rather confusing. The center line of Northwest Gleason Street and a line extended from the center line of Northwest Gleason to the west bank of the Willamette River. My reading of this says, okay, we've got a two-block north-south avenue, Jefferson to Madison, three, I don't remember, and from NATO Parkway up to I-405. Nice chunk. And then it sounds as if you also walk down the center line of Gleason to the west bank of the Willamette River, you're violating the ordinance. Unless I really have problem understanding what's written is a bit confusing.
We'll have the attorneys take a look at it. Oh,
okay,
thank you.
That's all.
Okay, thanks for your testimony. Sir, welcome.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, it's a pleasure to be here. The first thing that I would say is that the presentations earlier today have been very informative and instructive to me personally. And I think many of the conclusions and reservations that I had about the proposal prior to those presentations have been mitigated. I have no quarrel with the objectives of what we're trying to achieve, but I have concerns that we're not using all of the tools that are available. And I want to particularly focus on two residuals from all of the presentations. One is the penalty provisions for failing to report the loss of a weapon, and the penalty provisions if a child gains access to a gun. First off, with respect to the penalties for failure to report, one of the findings, I believe, was that that will somehow prevent people from claiming, when they're doing an illegal transfer, that that weapon was lost or stolen. In my mind, and I'm new to this, why would that be true as long as the penalty is less than the penalty for an illegal transfer? And you would not want to raise the penalty for failure to report, which could be incidental, to the same level as a as an illegal transfer. They're not the same. And then back to the issue of the penalties, which are very severe and are escalating when it comes to a minor gaining access without permission to a weapon in a household. That doesn't really help. It punishes, certainly, the person who owned the gun and who allowed and whose gun was stolen. But what we really need, and what is absent, it seems to me, in much of these proposals, is public education, awareness building. I think people do want to do the right thing. But education and persuasion and information is much more important in the long run than punishment after the fact. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, all of you. Appreciate it.
The next three are Teresa Rayford, Armando Payton, Garvin Franklin Jr., and they'll be followed by, I believe it's Taiwo Payton, Marina Dolternak, and Sean Elford. Okay. And Ross Elliott Gustafson.
Thank you very much for being here. We really appreciate it. And for your ongoing involvement in the Friday safety meetings. Really appreciate you being here.
Absolutely. And thank I you. Just wanted to say hello to the panel, to the council board, and everybody else that's here. And beyond just the meetings that we go to on Fridays, we follow up with the individuals that come to those meetings, and we attend their committees as well. So all week long, we've been going from juvenile to, you know, the county to the health department and everything else in order to voice our support in saving lives.
And I apologize for interrupting. If you could just say your name, first and last name. It's okay. We don't want addresses, just first and last name. And that clock in front of you will help you count down your 3 minutes, and we'll start the clock now.
All right.
Carla.
And my name is, shall I wait still?
Can you start the clock over again? Thanks.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. I'm Teresa Rayford. What else did I need to say? Okay. And I'm here because my nephew, Andre Payton, was killed on September 26th of 2010 downtown in Portland on Cooch Street. That's the entertainment district that the mayor is, you know, referring to in the hot spots as far as that is concerned. One of my things is that because my nephew died, and because this is a community that our families lived in for well over 80 years, we wanted to make it safe. We know that in our community, which is the Albina area and a lot of the areas that are mentioned in the hot spots, in the community where I grew up with and where my parents grew up and where their parents grew up, in the 80s and into the 90s and even now, like the officer said, there was a lot of violence and there was a lot of deaths attributed to guns. And so, you know, of course, when the 27th came around the day after my nephew died, and it was Monday morning, and I saw on the news that the mayor was standing there with Selena and the rest of the family and some leaders from the community, a lot of them who I don't see here today, and they were saying that they had this youth gun law in place that was going to help protect the children. Of course, knowing that my nephew had just been killed, I thought that that was a great idea. And so we wanted to figure out how do we support getting the guns away from the kids. And really, for us, knowing that that community didn't have gun dealers in the area where we bought them, we wanted to get into a functional situation where we can find out who the traffickers are that are bringing the guns there so that the kids can stop buying them because they're not going to the gun shop to get them. And so when I read this and I see that, first of all, they have 25% of the people of color. Why is that even in here? Are we saying that the people of color in the city of Portland are the ones that are the highest offenders using illegal weapons that are bought in trafficking?
No, that number refers to the victims. So 25%, so there are 25% of Portlanders are not white, and yet they are 50% of all the victims.
Right, and I'm saying, are those 50% of victims, are we knowing, is there a stat, is there a number of people that were killed with illegal weapons that were involved in trafficking? Because to my knowledge, this is a trafficking
law. Great question, we don't know. Great question.
That would make it relevant.
Okay.
Also, in the hot spots, if this is a gun trafficking law and we're wanting to protect the children, are these areas where the people that are illegally selling the guns to the children, is this where they're selling the guns? Is this where the children are using the guns? And are these places where the kids that are dying from the illegal guns, is this where they're dying?
So
another
the
question, because we so need the, to address who's sure. getting the guns into the community.
It's definitely, and I'll give you more time because it's good discussion. It's definitely assault with a gun or murder with a gun.
A gun that is involved in trafficking?
We don't always know, because that's why another element of this package is about reporting thefts and lost guns.
Absolutely. The penalties aren't high enough. I know that in the 80s, when there was a lot of gang banging going on, people would actually go to Milwaukee and buy guns from the people that had gun shops in parking lots. And I don't see anything in here that stops them from coming into the community to sell guns or from meeting us outside the borders in these hotspots to sell guns. I don't see anything in here as far as the amendments that really help us help keep our kids safe, because we also know that, you know, there's people that are putting the guns out here and it's not us. So that's what I would like to see in this, and that's why I'm here today, because I want to find out how is that going to be added to the amendment so that we don't have to worry about our kids if they're scared and they're not telling us. We don't have to worry about some guy selling them the guns. What's in here that's going to stop that? Because that's what the problem is.
Really appreciate your testimony, the questions you've raised.
My time is up.
Yeah, that's all right. But your efforts aren't, and I appreciate that. There are other actions and amendments, as you say, that we looked at that the city attorney concluded were not allowed under state law. So that's why the work of Senator Burdick and Senator Bonamici and others on changing state law, and that's part of our legislative package as a city, is also included. We have a lot of more work to do.
Can I ask you one quick question? And it could be on the record or off the record. I noticed in the slideshow they put on there the gang violence hotline. That's something that I sent to everyone in government and state at 4 o'clock in the morning. My nephew died at 2:06. I sent a comprehensive plan of activities or things that we could do. That was one of them. And our family is working on putting that together, and we were working with the county. And I wanted to refer to that to find out, is that what we're all working on together, or is that something
yes.
that you guys adopted from that? Okay. Just wanted to make sure, because it kind of hurt when I saw it, and I wasn't involved in the...
Yeah. So we're trying right now, the phone number, as you know, and is making sure that when people call that we're reasonably well organized.
Absolutely.
To give folks that one-stop shopping. So thanks for your work. Really appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Garvin Franklin, Jr. I speak today as a former member of the Crips gang and current member of BRO, B-R-O, Brothers Reaching Out. BRO is a community-based organization made up of former Crips and Blood gang members. Our main goal is to provide support, hope, and guidance to young people affected by gangs. While we understand the need and attempt by the city to address gang activity amongst minors, Mayor Adams, I don't see how your proposal ordinance address issues as they relate to gang activity. When we first reviewed the proposal, our immediate response was, how would this be funded? And if these proposals are for the entire city of Portland, why are they narrowly focused on specific demographic? That demographic is young black males. Mayor Adams, BRO has the following concerns on page 2, item 11 of the proposed ordinance, clearly state that gun trafficking is alive and well in Oregon. Instead of narrowly focusing on a specific demographic, why not stop illegal gun trafficking, period? In other words, how or who are these young people getting the guns from? The ordinance does not address the root cause, who is supplying the guns. Mayor Adams, young black gang members are not gun traffickers. Where is in the language in the ordinance that address gun traffickers? Our main concern, Mayor Adams, is you are functioning outside your jurisdiction according to ORS, Oregon Revised Statute 166-170, and I quote, the authority to regulate in any matter whatsoever the sale, acquisition, transfer, ownership, possession, storage, transportation, or use of firearms and components, therefore including ammunition, is vested solely in the legislative assembly. The state law is clear. The city has no authority in the matter. According to recent statistics, there are about 20 to 30 minors on probation for gun-related crimes in Multnomah County. If the ordinance is voted into law, no doubt young people who are not involved in gangs will be targeted. Does the city really need these broad, sweeping ordinance to deal with 20 to 30 minors? Another concern is you are quoted in a recent Oregonian article in saying you are not concerned with being sued to defend the ordinances. Mayor Adams, the last thing the city of Portland needs is to spend thousands of dollars going to court. That money would be better used in providing programs, jobs for young people affected by gangs. Our final point in this hotspot, aka gun zones, cannot stand. If drug zones and prostitution zones were ruled unconstitutional in the 90s, we suspect the same would be true for the proposed so-called hotspots. Bro would not support the proposed ordinance. Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony. Thank you both very much. Carla, the next.
Are Taiwo Payton, Marina Dolterak, and Ross Elliott Gustafson?
No, just shut them down. Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
How about Joanne Fairchild? And they'll be followed by Liz Julie, Felicia Williams, and Jerry Lawrence.
Hi, glad you're here. Please begin.
Sure, I'll go first. My name is Marina Poltrek. I am the pre-release coordinator for Volunteers of America Community Partners Reinvestment Project. And I'm here to advocate on behalf of folks on parole. First of all, I want to thank you so much for dealing with this very difficult, hard-to-express matter. We all want our children to live long enough to, well, we just want our children to live. I'm mostly concerned with the exclusionary areas, the hot spots. My participants, my clients, come out of prison, a lot of them with gun charges, a lot of them African-Americans. They've served 5 years, 8 years, 10 years, and they're coming out, and they're working with counselors, their parole officers, the courts, and we want them to go back in the community. We want them to get jobs. We want them to feel safe and welcome back in our city. And here we are throwing more restrictions, more barriers, more profiling, if I may put that word out, at them. They already suffer from a lot of police contact. My concern is that we have a great team of parole officers working with the gangs. I'd like to see them have the discretion about who goes to what areas, who needs a curfew, and who's doing well enough that we don't really need to put that many restrictions in front of them. I've spoken to several parole officers as well as their supervisor. They don't think this is a good idea. They don't think this will reduce gun crime in Oregon. I have a minute and 28 seconds. What else can I say?
You can give it back, too.
I think I'll stop here, then.
Thank you for your testimony. We really appreciate it and all your work in this area. It's really good work. Who would like to go next?
Oh, I'll go. My name is Joanne Fairchild. I'm trauma nurse coordinator responsible for injury prevention at Legacy Emanuel Hospital. I'd like to thank you, Mayor, and members of the council for allowing me to speak. I remember at the start of the gun wars when one of our juvenile probation officers came to us and said he had had 8 kids on his caseload murdered in 18 months, and for every young person that he lost to a murder, he lost at least one, if not more, that went into the criminal justice system. And he said, we have to do something. We put together a program called Save Our Youth. The hospital talked about reality, and then we tried to work with youth. The other members of the team tried to work with the youth on skill building, working with responsible adults in their lives. I remember, too, at that time that we had more young people in our intensive care unit from gun violence than we did from car crashes. And in teaching this class, what my apology to our young people was that it took us so long to act. So I would like to thank you for seeing a resurgence and acting now. I'm here specifically to talk about the child access protection. It seems to me that responsible adults, whether they're gun owners or not, should support not giving access to firearms to our kids. If they're getting them from the homes, we need to address that. If they're getting them from traffickers, we need to address that. We need to address their access. And just to add to the quote that Senator Burdick gave on, I would like to point out that children and youth without access to guns have a much more difficult time trying to kill themselves and others. And I'd also like to speak to the issue that ceasefire brought up. Suicide is the second leading cause of death for our kids, and we always worry about unintended consequences. In my opinion, child access protection will have the very positive unintended consequence of helping us with the youth suicide issue, since most kids kill themselves with their parents' gun. Thank you very much for addressing this issue.
And thanks for your work. I've not had an opportunity to see your outreach work in action, but I've heard of it, and it's very well regarded, so thank you. Hi, welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Ross Elliott, and I am currently a co-consul of the Portland Pink Pistols, the local gay gun club, and I am also the publisher of American Gun Culture Report, the local counterculture gun politics magazine. So I'd actually like to begin with a bit of an apology, because I am more or less a member of the gun lobby, which Jeannie Burdick was mentioning earlier, and it is true, as has been, as she was stating it, this is what we have been discussing, very heated issues, and there's been a lot of language that's definitely been used, more so, I would definitely admit, from my side of the camp. And I feel pretty bad about that, because I have been active in Second Amendment advocacy for quite a few years now, generally among the very progressive and liberal social climate of Portland. And it has been, I've experienced nothing but completely civil relations with people who did not agree with me at all. And I'm sorry that hasn't been more of a two-way street. Now, I'm here today because my main objection to Mayor Adams' proposals are that they, can't read my own handwriting, is that they ignore really the much more serious issues going on in our community. Now, we've definitely seen some rather alarming looking statistics, but the one that impresses me is that right now in the United States, social violence is at a low level unseen since the late 1940s, and there are more guns in our society than ever. But at the same time, our fellow Portlanders right now are being turned out of their homes into the rain. That seems like a much more pressing concern to me. Now, I voted for Mayor Adams, actually, because I saw him as being a social progressive, which is what I certainly consider myself to be. But exclusion zones and gun controls and restrictions, those are not tools that I consider being in the progressive toolbox. Those are things that have been historically used to crack down on, keep down working class communities and communities of color in the United States. That's historically been the case. And I don't want to see Portland going that way. Now, if there is something that we do know that does make for a less violent society, it's social equality. And so that's more the direction that I'd like us to see us using our time working towards. I would much rather see us put effort into, instead of gun controls, towards banker controls. Instead of working to restrict people's freedoms, I'd like to see us being able to open windows to let in some fresh air. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony tonight. Next three.
Next three are Liz Julie, Felicia Williams, and Jerry Lawrence. And they'll be followed by Joanne Bowman. I believe the name is Arian Rachison and Mary Ann Hallinan.
Hi, welcome. Would you like to begin, sir?
Sure. I'm Jerry Lawrence. I'm a concerned grandparent. One of my sons, grandsons, a gang member, just received 10 years. Former gun violence. I can take you back to the 80s when gangs first started. Dennis Payne, Oscari, and the young man back here, James, was involved in it. I say that because it's a reason why gangs started. Until we understand the reason how it started, we won't understand how to stop it. We have professional reports. It was excellent. The community meeting was nice. The meeting here was excellent. But do it get to the root of the problem? I don't think so. It's in the mind. The children are raised by children, and they have a mind-thinking ability. Until the POs and the judges order some kind of mental evaluation. My grandson told me before he went to jail, he stayed with me. He told me, Grandpa, we don't care. These children don't care if they go to jail or not. They don't care if they die. So is these beautiful professional reports is going to help it? No, it's not. 30 days in jail, if you ask a judge to tell you they'll do that standing on their head. Just hotspot areas, that's not going to stop it. They'll move from one area to another. I'm 60-plus years old. I've seen it all. I've seen it. Now, I think that we need to retweak this proposal and try to do it right, or we can do it one time. We've been fighting this for 30 years, almost 30 years. Bud Clark, Vera Katz, now you. Are we going to be fighting it another 30 years? Bud Clark says, oh, it's only a few people. It's only a couple hundred. All right, now look at it. Look where gangs are at. So we need to tweak this program and this proposal with some community involvement. The last meeting we had at North Precinct, it was a handful of people. I didn't see the community that we had 20 years ago or 10 years ago. So I went and asked one of them. He said, they don't listen. And I ask you today, who are you listening to?
Thank you, sir, very much. Appreciate you being here. Ma'am?
Mayor Adams, commissioners, my name is Liz Julie. I am a board member of Ceasefire Oregon Education Foundation. However, today I would like to speak in my role as a grandmother and a great-grandmother. I have 6 grandchildren and 1 great-grandchild who live in the city of Portland. 5 of those children are of mixed race. They love one another, no matter the color of their skins. They love to associate with other children of various skin colors. Sometimes I have to stop and wonder how safe they are. I applaud Mayor Adams for making these proposals. I believe that these proposals will make all of the children of our city safer. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Hi, welcome.
Hi, my name is Felicia Williams, and I'm part of the PDX Civil Rights Project, coordinator for that. So this is kind of my bread and butter as a historian. I focus a lot on these issues and how they've impacted Portland. There are a couple of things that I always bring up with my students when we look at issues like this, especially around mandatory minimums. If a law looks race neutral on its face but has a disproportionate negative racial impact, then it's a social justice issue. And I can see where this is going to become a social justice issue. For example, punishments for gun violations, mandatory minimum of 30 days for a loaded gun in the car. You know, these are kids. You get them in the juvenile justice system, you start treating them like adults, they're stuck in the cycle. There's not really many options of getting out of the cycle. That's problematic. Because, again, these are children. They're not thinking like rational adults. So maybe we should be focusing more on how to address the issues that are facing their daily lives. Second issue that I have is the kids that are on the supervision for the exclusion zones, do these apply at all hours? Part of the reason why I asked that is because it looks like you've got two libraries that are excluded. So that would be kind of problematic for people who actually have to do research during school hours. Last one, no gun zones. They remove the probable cause requirements. So that right there seems like you're getting into some legal sticky zones. The cops just can go ahead. They don't need probable cause. They can go ahead and frisk somebody and search them. That's problematic. The other area that I was also concerned about was the fact that you guys aren't going after trafficking, but the good folks at BRO already took care of that. But I do think that we need to look at how these laws create racial disparities. They may be colorblind on the surface, but if they have a disproportionate negative impact on racial groups, then that's something that we really need to consider.
Thank you all for your testimony. Appreciate it. Next three.
Here are Joanne Bowman, Ariane, I believe the last name is Renathakam, and Mary Ann Hallinan.
Hi, welcome back.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor, City Council members. For the record, my name is Joanne Bowman, and I'm here today to say that though I appreciate the work that's gone into this ordinance, I support part of it. I support the part that says if you own a firearm, you have a responsibility to keep it safe so that people can't steal it. So I support that totally. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I totally am in opposition to creating an ordinance to target, which has grown to 30 kids today. The last time we talked, there was 10 kids. The meeting that we had on November 5th, I was told there was 10 kids would be impacted. The police, the probation officers, everybody knew them. But for the sake of argument, today I heard 30. If there really are only 30 families within the city of Portland limits that this ordinance is supposed to impact, I would be willing to help you facilitate a community meeting with all those families, bringing them together to develop a community solution to this problem. It seems insane that we would be creating an ordinance for the entire city if everybody knows who these kids are, they know where the kids live, they know they're on probation. Why could we not have a community meeting to actually figure out how we provide resources to the family? Because clearly there's something going on in the family when you have a kid shooting firearms. And so to me, it just seems like we could use our resources so much more effectively by targeting wraparound services for these families that clearly are in desperate need of social service supports. We've gone through the exclusion zone before, and though I respect Lieutenant Humphrey, I know what happens on the street when police officers at night are stopping black kids. Are you really going to tell me they're going to know the black kid that they're stopping? I don't believe that, Mayor. I don't. I believe that they're going to stop kids until they identify themselves, and then they're going to tell them they can go along their way. But the damage has already been done. And so I think the gun part of this ordinance makes sense. I think the other part, we shouldn't go there. If we know the families, let's fix the family problems. Let's not pass a law that's supposed to impact the entire city. I'm done.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Hi, welcome to council.
Hello, my name is Mary Ann Hallinan. I agree completely with the previous speaker and her statements. My son was shot at close range 5 times when he was 18, and he survived. So I appreciate you trying to do something against gun violence. I feel Portland is not a large, large city. I come from Detroit. So Portland, to me, is a big, small town. And I support some of the propositions, but some I do not. But the main one I'm really kind of frustrated about is a hot spot area. I really don't feel that's very realistic, especially the square area that you have marked off in the northeast area. A lot of families there are generational families. They've been there for years. They're very supportive of each other. There's huge family sections. you take a young, and we'll say black male, take a young black male from a family that's committed a crime. Now, legally, if I'm understanding it right, he is not to be in that hotspot area. So what if his family all lives in that area? So he's excluded. So does that mean, one, he has to move to a completely other area of town? His family has to move? Well, it's my understanding that he cannot be, not just at curfew, but he's not supposed to be in the hotspot area 24 hours a day.
No, the ordinance is very clear about the exemptions. And if he lives there or traveling to see family in a whole lit, you can look at the list of exemptions in the law. So the answer to your specific question is no, he would not be excluded.
So if he was in a, if he had that charge and he was in a hotspot area and his family lived there, that would be perfectly fine for him to be walking around all day in the hotspot area.
You need to look at the language of the exemptions. And it, I think, pretty clearly spells out in as far as ordinance language goes, it's in pretty, even I can understand, it's in pretty straightforward terms.
Okay, well, I did not see that language, but that was my concern.
Kate can give you a copy of it right there, and welcome your thoughts on it.
Okay, that was my concern, if the family has to move, and then if he does move to an area and is living in an area that is not a hotspot area and he's settled, and then a hotspot area that he's in becomes a hotspot area. I just saw a lot of problems evolving up from that.
I appreciate your concern.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here. Sir?
Hi, my name is Arjun Ratnathakam. That's first name, A-R-J-U-N. Thank you. I do not agree with the gang enforcement chief's assessment that this problem is as simple as identifying the criminals, isolating and tracking them, and locking down on them. That in itself will not solve the problem because the problem is more endemic. What the elderly gentleman said earlier is correct. Proverbs 6:2 states in part that one is taken by the words of their mouth and must, in delivering themselves, go to the hand of their friend and humble themselves to him, to them, in peace. Basically, what it says is that one who is responsible for another's debt is trapped and controlled because he has yielded control of what God has given him as a stewardship. It is serious enough that it is imperative to take control of one's own God-given resources and get out of such an intolerable arrangement immediately. Deliver oneself before coming to poverty or slavery. Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, and legislators, the time has come for Portland to take responsibility for the debt it owes to its citizens of color, to take a hold of the resources that it owes to its citizens, the resources it has at its disposal, and use them immediately to pay off this debt through action against inequities in education, health care, housing, injustice, and employment before it succumbs itself to poverty and injustice. It's a clarion call, and we're sounding the trumpet. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you all. The next three?
The last person who signed up is Michael Johnson.
Mr. Johnson? Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this matter that didn't sign up? Now would be the time to come forward. Welcome. Glad you're here.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, commissioners. Michael Johnson, Take 3 Outreach Services, also minister of Vancouver Avenue First Baptist Church, once a former gang member of the Columbia Villa Crips. I spoke before this panel of the last administration, and I'm here again before this administration. The proposal is a great idea. It's a great idea, but what's in the proposal has been previously spoken before me is that there's a lot of discrepancies there. Part of it's good, part of it's not good. You would deal with racial profiling when you have part of that proposal. I think the second part is what Ms. Bowman spoke about, is one of the issues that would come about. If you look at your previous exclusion laws when you had drugs on the table, it failed pretty much. And the same thing would happen here. Hotspots. Hotspots change all the time with gang members. They make up their own hotspots. When I heard the lieutenant speak about knowing gang members and knowing who's carrying guns, there's new gang members being created every month. And they don't care, like the gentleman said, about anything. And so with that in turn, the violence will still go on. There's a question that was asked, Mr. Mayor, is that who are you consulting and who are you speaking with on this proposal? I've been working closely with gang violence for the last 10 years. I've been at the table of the gang task force for the last 6 years. When it first started out in the community before it actually got to the government officials at large. And one of the things is that your first line of defense is going to be your community. I've always echoed there's a disconnect between government and community at this moment. And until that gets fixed or addressed, you're still going to have this disconnect. And you're going to still have the resistance with the community when you do propose any proposal. And I think that once you address some of the main issues here, and I think I clearly hear it over and over, is jobs when it's come to the young people. The young people that we work at, they were very happy when we did a collaboration with the Black Citizens Coalition about the fire department. It went very successful. We have young people who went and worked with the parks. It was very successful. We have young people who were working with the Women's Trade Center. It went very successful. Jobs are key issues with these young people. If they do not have a purpose, they will not go have a goal, and they would not reach it, and they would turn to other avenues to self-destruct. Thank you for this opportunity, and look forward to working with you if you ever call on Take 3 Outreach.
Thank you very much for your work. Really appreciate it. So I wanted to, Dave, if you'd come forward, and Kate and Warren, just to go through a few issues here and then hear from council as well.
I think we have one more person who wants to testify.
I heard you say that now's the time if we want to give.
Okay. Yeah. Anyone else?
I didn't sign up outside because I got here late.
That's okay. Anyone else? All right. You're it then. Just all you need to do is tell us your name, first and last name, and that clock in front of you will help you count down your...
I've done this many times. It was on homelessness back then. My name's Crystal Elinsky, and segueing over from homelessness. Well, I definitely agree with the people that spoke here that I heard, and it's all about community. Definitely, I don't know why we put so much effort into this crime-fighting ideas, and I don't know where you're getting... advice or who you're consulting, I wonder as well, because it seems to me that the community always has the answers. I mean, we had it back at the sit-lie ordinance time, and now we have it when it comes to getting these families together and getting things done. But the biggest problem, I mean, there are different levels of this problem. One of them, of course, is the police, and I'm glad that we're finally getting police accountability. I don't want us to spend too much time on it, and I want it to be harsher than it has been, most definitely. But part of that process is for the community to go listen in and be a part of that. So I'm grateful that that's happening. In the meantime, the Great Recession is getting, it's just the elephant in the room. And when there aren't any services out there, when we don't have things like voter-owned elections, and we don't have places for the homeless to go, and people who are on public assistance, like me, are struggling all the time, and we're resorting to things that we wouldn't normally have to, and that's the problem. And if this is about targeting certain repeat offenders and whatnot, I've heard this all before. No, let's get our effort and our money out there to the community. Listen to the community. We have the neighborhood associations. All that funding's been cut. And what about the Portland plan? We could be really listening to people who were a part of Vision PDX, per se. And, you know, they had answers for this. And I don't like to see any of our citizens being targeted. It keeps happening, and I've been out there in that situation, and then I've been in neighborhoods where I've seen people targeted. I really, really urge you to first listen to your community before you make these drastic decisions. Let's clean up our police force. Let's give more community more programs out there for kids. Improve our schools. This all costs a lot less. It's like giving money to TriMet or the Fire Bureau instead of voter-owned elections. I mean, this is ridiculous. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Mayor, may I just make one comment for the record? We have a report of inclement weather today, tomorrow, the chance that it's going to be very cold. And I just want to let people know that we have, in fact, activated our emergency action plan. So people that are sleeping on the streets, that are looking for a shelter if there is a storm, the system is in place. The warming centers have been established. The emergency backup systems run by the Red Cross are in place. So if there is a storm or some other inclement weather this long weekend, we are prepared. And I just want to be very clear that if you are outside and worried about your health and safety over the next few days moving forward, the system is in place.
So are the shelters open tonight, Commissioner Fish, the warming centers? How does that work?
So I'd have to I can't answer that because okay. we have a triggering system and someone else who does it, but they're established and we have a protocol. I wanted to counter the notion that as we enter the weather.
So let me go through a couple
Mayor,
of
excuse me, Mayor, we have one more person who asked to testify.
I did last call twice now. You okay? You want to testify?
I would love to.
Okay, coming up. This is the last call, I promise. Thank you for waiting.
Thank you. Stephanie Kowalski and...
Could you get a little closer to that mic? We don't have a very good system there. Welcome. I'm glad you're here, Stephanie.
Thank you. I would like to speak specifically to the youth portion of this. I had an opportunity to attend a conference with a four-panel Oregon Youth Authority event down in Eugene about a month ago. And every single one of the youth that spoke spoke to the need for support and treatment and rehabilitation versus punishment and restrictions and being segregated. They're already segregated when they serve their time. When they come out of that, what they need is support. They need resources. They need avenues to take that are going to take them down a different path than what they've previously chosen. To restrict them from certain areas is saying, we don't trust you to have accepted your sentence and to have paid the price that we've laid down for you, and so we're going to restrict you from this area. If there are only 30 kids right now as we speak, why can't we take that money and fund programs for them, give them gang education, bring this education into the schools before it becomes a problem, be proactive instead of reactive.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. So Kate and David and Warren, a couple of issues to go through, and then council might have some as well. Again, the concern about the boundaries, appreciate that. Lawyers have checked and feel like it's clear. So Erwin, usually you're very good at picking out these things. So there, maybe you could talk sidebar conversations. In terms of trafficking and penalties and going after trafficking, state law prevents us from going deeper into what I think folks would call trafficking, the sale and transfer of guns. That's expressly That is words used that are preempted. So it will be very helpful to the police on the issue of trafficking to have the report of lost or stolen guns and the serial numbers. I mean, that is the basis for keeping track of the trafficking of guns. So it is, we looked at doing something more in depth. Our lawyers said that we were precluded, but just having basic information when guns are lost or stolen and their serial number will be, according to our friends in the Police Bureau and the District Attorney's Office, incredibly helpful on the issue of trafficking, whether they're passed or sold or what have you. In terms of the constitutionality, we've been very careful. The presentation from the, I rely on the city attorney, presentation by the city attorney talked about that. The issue of racial profiling is one that is a very, very deep concern to myself, and I know the city council. The hotspots are very different than the previous exclusion zones. The previous exclusion zones, you could be excluded based on an infraction. This requires you, when you're considered for exclusion, to have actually been adjudicated by a court or a juvenile court, either an adult court or a juvenile court. Previous exclusions, you could be excluded for in any kinds, a whole variety of infractions unrelated to drugs or prostitution, even though they might have been designated as a drug or prostitution-free zone. These hotspots are only dealing, the only people that are impacted are those that have been court convicted or adjudicated for actual firearm crimes. So if a person was convicted by a court for drug dealing, would not be excluded. Car theft, not excluded. Only illegal use of a firearm. So it's much more narrow. This requires that the police keep track of stops and data. Previous exclusion zones did not have oversight committees and, frankly, were very poorly operated in various places and at various times. This has oversight, regular monitoring, data collection, and regular monitoring for profiling. This is a very different crime as well than drugs or prostitution, where the disparity in race was much different. We have, in this particular case, the majority of people who are assaulted or murdered are people of color, specifically African-American Portlanders. So on this particular crime, there is much, it is gruesome, but we have to deal with this issue, and I appreciate people raising it. The people getting murdered and assaulted by guns are Portlanders of color. There is a variety of people of different races that are perpetrating these crimes. But as we look to disparity, and we must, and racial profiling, and we must, we also have a responsibility of who, what are the races, what are the racial groups, the demographic groups that are being most impacted, disproportionately impacted at the wrong end of these guns? We have to consider that as well. In terms of ignoring other issues, no. Strategy that Commissioner Shipwreck spoke to is an encompassing strategy. My introduction highlighted a little bit of it. We, yes, need to do a better job of making it easier for folks that want to turn away from a life of crime and violence. We need to do a better job, and we will, in weeks, not months, not years, in weeks. But that cannot be at the absence of tools that can save lives and reduce injuries. That cannot be hold hostage things that we could do to save Portlanders' lives and reduce their injuries. Community involvement on this issue, the first drafts of this went out, and we've been going to meetings and asking for feedback. Went out August, September, October. So 3 months these have been out. And we've actively been going to groups. Did we hit everybody? No. Does this mean with the passage of them that we end our discussion of even these pieces? Absolutely not. That's why there's an oversight group. We will continue. I know it is sometimes the tradition of other governments that things are passed and they just sort of go on autopilot, not here. And we've set it up. You don't have to take my word for it. We set up the laws so that there is accountability and data collection reporting back to the City Council in public hearings. In terms of exemptions and exclusions,